This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone from around the world. Thanks for joining us on another great episode of Baseball Outside the Box. You know that this is the show that brings you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. And I am your host, Pete Caliendo. As always, we are thrilled that you're with us. We're going to have another great show for us. First of all, great thank you to the Lineup Media Group. They've got an outstanding podcast lineup. Check it out on lineupmediagroup.fm. And also, don't forget, check out our Twitter at Baseball Out. We are on Facebook, Baseball Outside the Box. Don't forget, if you love our show, please give us a 5-star rating. Just go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Go to iTunes and Stitcher. Check it all out. Give us the ratings, and it really helps us get the show going. So we are going to start. We are thrilled today because we have another incredible, outstanding, not only baseball coach, instructor, teacher, he is one of the best in the world, and we are going to be talking about so many things about pitching. We're going to talk about, you know, pitching myths, momentum pitching, natural mechanics, how he handles major league pitchers. This is going to be one of the best shows that we've ever had. We are so thrilled. He is one of the best pitching coaches in the world, Brett Strom, and we want to tell you all about him. Of course, you know about the 2017 Houston Astros. They are the World Series champion. He is the pitching coach. He was a former major league pitcher, but he also was the coordinator for the St. Louis Cardinals pitching system. Brett is known all over the world because he is so great. He goes along with the International Sports Group, our organization, as a speaker and talks to coaches around the world, helping them with throwing and pitching. And believe it or not, he also was the second pitcher to have Tommy John surgery within his career. I'll tell you what, we are thrilled. Brett, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, especially on your day off. Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box.
Well, thank you, Peter. It's always fun to talk pitching with interested people.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I have, you know, you and I, we haven't had a chance, and, you know, I've seen you so many times, but I haven't had a chance to actually meet you. But I've known about you for a long time and followed a lot of things that you do. And it's just great to have you on the show. Now, here, the thing I'd like to start off with is, I think, because if I got that right from my research, you were the second pitcher to have Tommy John surgery. That was according to Tommy John, I believe, in an interview. If that's correct, we'd love to hear about, you know, why you think that happened and how that influenced your coaching career from that point on.
Well, I always make fun of not fun because it's a serious injury, but I'm the kind of the Buzz Aldrin of Tommy John surgeries, being the second guy. Everybody knew Neil Armstrong. Yep. Buzz Aldrin's kind of a footnote, and I'm kind of a footnote. But I think it's really having the surgery itself swayed my interest and piqued my interest in arm injuries and proper mechanics and throwing. And I knew I was on a downward spiral with how my arm was feeling as I started to mature and got into college and eventually signed a professional contract. And then I basically was putting band-aids on an open wound, trying to survive at the major league level. So it became a very important facet of my teaching and trying to help eliminate that injury in particular.
And how did you, let's talk about when you started your coaching career. I mean, you know, especially with pitchers, you know, where, did you teach how you were doing it, or did you start researching right away to make sure you were teaching it correctly? You know, and a lot of coaches, even myself, you know, in the old days, you know, taught how we were taught. How did that all evolve to where you're at now, kind of?
Well, you know, most of us back, you know, I'm a lot older than you, Pete. Most of the people probably listening to this podcast, and when you're throwing, I threw an exorbitant amount of innings as a high school pitcher, not being physically, really never having lifted weights or anything. I was a three-sport guy and played basketball, football, and baseball. So basically was just competing the entire time. And my delivery is what it was. I was successful. And, of course, when you're successful, you just keep going. But now looking back, I was in, you know, I went past the acromial line. My arm went behind my body a little too far. And the stress that I put on myself basically started to create a downhill spiral. And by the time I finally signed a professional contract with the Mets in 1970, as I was signing that contract, I knew things weren't particularly right. But then, you know, pain becomes a relative thing. And when it only hurts a little bit, you feel you're healthy. But I just kind of knew in my heart that things weren't going right, and I just had no way of changing. I had no instruction. I had no really guidelines. And so I made it a point to, when I got done, to kind of look into different things, a lot of influences. Tom House was a major influence. Mm-hmm. Paul Nyman was a major influence. There were a number of people that I started to look at throwing from the javelin, rotational things with the shot put and the people that threw the hammer and things like that, and started to understand connection a little bit better and how the body should actually work. And so started teaching that. And many times I would work with young people and I would learn as much from them as they hopefully learned from me. So it was something that I kind of put my stamp on to try and get the best information possible. I don't think anybody can eliminate it, but we hopefully can cut it down anyway, the amount of injuries that we're incurring.
You know, and that's a great point. That's something we talked a lot about on the show with different people. I really want to get your perspective on this because, you know, it's not a perfect science. And you're seeing, you know, especially nowadays, and I've heard you talk about, you know, velocity, you know, and so forth. We can't put everything on it perfectly, but can you give us an idea from a younger age? What do you think some of the young players need to be doing to make sure at least to decrease the ability or the chance of getting injured in the long run? What are some of the things they need to focus on?
Well, I think one of the things that young people need to realize and is that by being connected, rhythm and timing become so important. And many times we're caught up into what we look like and where the arm is and things like that. But there's really a rhythm and timing of the lower half and the upper half working. And so for a left-handed pitcher like myself, what I was doing with my lead leg, my right leg, because the body works in a cross type timing. And you're really looking at where are you at foot strike? Are you in a strong position? And basically most pitchers that get so caught up in this velocity thing that they will do things just to throw hard. And in the beginning, there's no issue. But with mm-hmm. each impending poor throw, I believe a little notch is taken out and the stress starts to build up. And I kind of chuckle when people say I hurt my arm on any particular pitch. It's usually a culmination of bad movements that finally the joint basically says I've had enough. And pain is a way of telling us we're doing something wrong because we weren't designed to do this. And if you think about the way the elbow wants to work, it wants to work in extension and contraction. And the closer we can get this, where we're driving the ball in a straight line with rotational properties taking over, then the better chance we have of trying to stay as healthy as possible. And I think that's where, you know, when we start throwing at age 6 to 7 up to 14 or whatever, it's important to have instructors that understand how the body moves and timing and rhythm and things like that. So I think that's where we're really falling down a little bit. And then it's perpetuated at the higher levels when winning becomes the number one thing. And we have to put the physical attributes of each pitcher and understand rhythm and timing for the most part to help these young people succeed.
Sure. And I know you mentioned many times, you call it natural pitching mechanics, meaning momentum, yeah. Velocity. I believe you said better control, less stress. Kind of delve into that a little bit because, you know, a lot of times you hear mechanics and you hear mechanical movement, what we taught possibly in the past, you know, the balance point and so forth.
Well, the word mechanics is probably the wrong word. We're talking about movement patterns mm-hmm. that we're developing. And really, if you think about it, baseball way back Civil War days used to have a what they call the slab. And the pitcher used to be able to run up to the line and throw the ball much like a bowler does in cricket. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, the momentum of the body moving allowed the arms and legs to work in sequence with each other. Then they put the mound and they forced us to kind of start from the beginning at a balance point, and then timing got messed up a little bit. And so what you want to try and do is create as much momentum and rhythm. And many times you'll watch people when they start to have control issues, what most pitchers will do is or pitching coaches will take movement away from people, which I think is the wrong thing. I often ask pitchers, do you know how to dance? Do you know how, do you have any rhythm? Do you have this little beat of balance, these things that enter into the movement pattern and allow things to flow? And so invariably we'll go back to long toss. We'll go back to, doing a crow hop and throw, and then take it to the mound, try and recreate that feeling, videotape it, and try and recreate a feeling of moving as the body moves, and the arm will kind of time up with the lead leg. But getting, you know, many of the myths that you've brought to the forefront through your people that you meet, the balance, getting to a balance point, balance point, take the ball out of the glove early, point the fingers back at second base, keep your head right on line. Those kind of things. Those are the myths that really kind of hurt young pitchers. And I really believe if left to their own devices, young people would probably figure out the right way to throw. But to me, I've often made this statement, no coaching is better than bad coaching. And I think that's where we as coaches need to educate ourselves a little bit better.
Wow, that's outstanding. Now, I wanted to ask you this because, you know, it sounds like each pitcher is pretty much their own person, their own body. So pitchers can do different things and still accomplish what they're trying to reach.
Well, yeah, there's no question. I mean, I firmly believe if you look at a Chris Sale or you look at a Scherzer, people have been indicating because of their, let's take Sale, for example, rail thin, unique delivery. People keep thinking for him to break down, which he hasn't. You look at Scherzer, the Diamondbacks, I firmly believe may have had questions about Scherzer's durability. No question when you look at it with the naked eye. But if you look at where the body is at weight-bearing foot plant and where the stress is going to be taking place, they're outstanding. Their deliveries are very, very good. Much better than, say, someone you would watch like a Mark Pryor, for example, who was supposed to have stellar mechanics and ends up breaking down. So we as coaches, and we need to look at the critical points in the delivery, not what they look like prior to. It's kind of akin to professional golfers. If you look at the swing of a Jim Furyk or a Lee Trevino, much less aesthetically pleasing than say a Jack Nicklaus or a Tiger Woods. Yet as they make contact, everything looks the same. They get in the right slot and they square the ball up. So there's different ways to get to the right spot. It's just what happens when the critical spots are hit and where are you at that point in time. So you can stand on your head and do your delivery, but if at weight bearing foot strike, if you're in the correct position with lead arm, back arm, front leg, sitting into your glutes the right way, things like that, then you minimize the stress. And that's what we really need to look at. Don't look at the style, kind of look at the substance of the delivery is most important.
You know what, something that also, Brent, that a lot of coaches, you know, have talked about in the past, and I think it's another of the myths that I'd really love for you to address. You know, we talk about staying back, compared to get it and go. Maybe explain that to our coaches so that way they really understand that aspect of it.
Well, if you think about it, I often use the phrase that momentum, simply put, is a force multiplier. And when you have momentum, you're actually increasing the force that you can place on the baseball. And so when you have somebody like the size of Roger Clemens, who has great rhythm and momentum, you have something special. The smaller pitchers like a Pedro Martinez or a Billy Wagner, these kind of people, they possibly may need a little bit more momentum to create equal force. And so when you have movement, which allows you to create your body weight moving forward as you're getting ready to throw, it quickens up the arm action. And basically, you can really never move too fast as long as it's controllable. And like golf swings, there are some people that can control a very fast takeaway and other people that have a slower takeaway. But in the pitching process, staying back just forces you to, the throwing arm is waiting for the lead leg to make its move. And so really that's why you see some people can really throw well. One of the drills I do to create this is if you took a right-handed pitcher and placed him at third base, hit the ball to his backhand, let him bend over, which creates the hinge in the torso, loads up the back, the right glute in a right-handed pitcher. He bends down to pick up the ball with his backhand. Now
what you have then is an internally rotated upper body, an externally rotated lower body, and then the body reverses that as they throw to first base. It's probably the perfect pitch. And so momentum is a vitally important aspect of throwing. And in the pre-Civil War days, they used to, the way they used to pitch in the Civil War, during Civil War days, was they actually had a line that you could run up to and throw, much like a bowler throwing in cricket. And but now they have a stable slab, they call it. That's where the word slab came from, and that's the pitching rubber. And so basically, as you step back and then step into the rubber with your post foot, you're trying to create this movement that allows a simulation of being able to, like a shortstop, come in, field the ball, and throw, an outfielder getting behind the ball to throw, or a catcher, when a guy's stealing, actually moving prior to the ball getting into his glove. So momentum is huge and vitally important for pitchers.
And interesting, you know, you never see really – as coaches, we never really, you know, take a shortstop or an outfielder and make them, you know, balance or slow down. You know, we want them to sit it and go. That's a great analogy. I love that, especially the third base analogy. Yeah. Another thing you hear
you can do the same thing. I really believe this is an important point. People often ask me, why do you think left-handed pitchers throw slower than right-handed pitchers? And by and large, it's true, but there's only 10% of us that are left-handed in the world. And then a disproportionate number of us are in professional baseball because of the uniqueness of being left-handed. And so you do the same drill with your left-handed pitcher at first base and have him throw the ball a third, and it really helps the body time itself up. Another thing that hurts young left-handed pitchers is the fact that what's the only position they allow us to play when we're young? They put us in the outfield, they put us at first base, and they put us at pitcher. Yeah. If I had a son and I was the coach of my little league team, I'd probably put him at shortstop. And that would force the, on a ground ball to a left-handed shortstop, he would have to move his feet quickly, load up quickly, and develop an arm action that would allow him to throw a base runner out. Unfortunately, they don't do that. And then lastly, once the left-handed pitcher learns that he can pick people off, they become enamored with that, and they lose momentum, and they like to kind of hang and play that first base game, which invariably hurts their development, I think, in determined velocity.
Yeah, and that's what I love. And that's what I love about the show. That's why I'm so thrilled to have you on there, because, I mean, look at that analogy. I mean, you know, the left-handed pitcher playing short, of course, nobody wants to do that, but not, you know, but it makes so much sense for the development. That's what a lot of our young coaches need to remember, is we're in the development business, not in necessarily the winning business. And something that you talk about also, or at least had mentioned many times before, I want to address is the stride length, because there is some, you know, issues about how far should they stride? Do kids under stride, or even older players? Would love to hear your aspect of that.
Well, stride length is a function of your hip mobility, hamstring mobility, things like that. There is no magic number. It basically, as I said before, is the timing of the arms and the legs. And if you think about it, if a young person does a jumping jack and as they jump in the air, the legs extend, the arms extend, and that's timing right there. You can do it fast, you can do it slow. Mm-hmm. And whatever allows the stride, whatever stride is their stride, you want to try and match it up with the arm path so that when that foot does hit the ground, that you're in a strong position to throw the baseball, that you're doesn't have to be perfectly vertical like an L, but that's stride length. You know, this numbers have been thrown around, 85% of the height, this and that. But really, it depends on their mobility of their hips and their ability to how they rotate and things like that. So I would not place much stock in numbers, quite frankly. I would just look to see if things are timed up.
Does flexibility, Brent, have anything to do with that? Let's say I got a guy that's not as flexible as you mentioned, mobility. Do we get him more flexible to get a better stride length that coordinates with his movement patterns?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that most people should do is take an assessment. If a pitcher, you should always assess your pitcher's physicality before you do anything at all, whether you're going to go on any kind of strength program, mobility program, things like that, in which case you can see if there's an unequal balance between the quads and the hamstrings, or the triceps and the biceps, things like that. We really want homeostasis. We want things to be equaled out as we make this movement pattern. So that's always a possibility. Now, whether that results in more velocity or not, I can't definitively say yes. But we do know that the, you know, mobility is important. But again, you have young people that are too flexible. You have young people that are not flexible enough. So it's not a one-size-fits-all type thing.
All right, everybody. That concludes the first half of the show with World Series champion Houston Astros pitching coach Brent Strom. What a great first half. Cannot wait for the second half. I think you will really enjoy it and take lots of notes. We'll continue to talk to Brent about pitching movements. We'll get into the how he deals with his major league pitchers during the season and the offseason to keep consistency, strength. And then we'll ask Brent how they use advanced statistics and metrics to their benefit, calling pitches. How is that done? Who determines what? Who makes those calls? What are the game plans? Are we going after the tendencies of the hitter's weaknesses? Are we using the pitcher's strength? That will be very interesting. And also when he goes out to the mound and a pitcher's struggling, some of the conversations that they have. I think that would be unique to find out the conversations they have and what situations. I think that'll help a lot of our coaches around the world. That's a very important area. We're going to discuss the philosophy Brett has with his pitching staff throughout the minor league system, how he keeps consistency. And we want to definitely ask Brett about what makes him so successful and unique from other pitching coaches, not only at the major league level, but also all over the world. So don't forget, join our show the second half. And we are on Twitter at Baseball Out. That's our social media. We're also on Facebook, Baseball Outside the Box, and our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. My email is petercaliendo@icloud.com. Please email me anytime you have any questions. Love to get back to you. We'll get back to you right away. Special thanks to Brian Kroc, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. And again, Brent Strom for the first half of the show. We look forward to the second half. Remember, coaches, education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.